It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station. I was wondering when the band was going to kick in. Coming up on the Midday Report, Congresswoman Mary Peltola has passed her first bill in the House. Today is a day of remembrance for Indian boarding schools in the U.S. and Canada and their legacy. Community members in a small town on the northern Prince of Wales Island are fighting against the state's plan to cut old-growth timber right up into city limits. And protesters in Anchorage are frustrated that the Anchorage police force still does not have body cameras a year and a half after voters approved them. Currently 45 degrees under fair skies here in Kodiak. It is a beautiful day. Winds are calm out at the airport right now. They have 10 miles of visibility, and humidity is at 86%.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. South Carolinians are waiting out Hurricane Ian, which made landfall near Georgetown today with top winds of 85 miles per hour. South Carolina Public Radio's Scott Morgan is south of Charlotte.
The governor told everybody to stay home today, pretty much, for the most part, and people listened. This is South Carolina. We don't seem to be that worried about Category 1 hurricanes because, unfortunately, we see a lot of storms like this. So I think people are just kind of taking it in stride. I don't see any really special preparations. So far, no fatalities have been reported in the state, and I haven't heard of any injuries yet in the state. So things, knock on wood, seem to be moving along pretty well.
Multiple deaths have been reported, though, in Florida, where Hurricane Ian made landfall 2 days ago. Thousands of nursing home and assisted living residents there evacuated due to Ian. NPR's Laura Benchoff reports that while many made it out before the storm, rising floodwaters forced some emergency rescues.
More than 40 nursing homes moved their residents before Hurricane Ian hit Wednesday afternoon, mostly from Florida's southwestern coast. Kristen Knapp of the Florida Healthcare Association says at least five more facilities were forced to evacuate during and after the storm, including some outside the evacuation zone.
The water rose so quickly because they took on so much rain that they had to leave.
NPR also reached some nursing homes in southwest Florida that rode out the storm and are currently running on generator power. Following Hurricane Irma 5 years ago, Florida passed a law that all assisted living and nursing homes must have backup power to keep residents safe. Laura Benchoff, NPR News.
Now, we've been following a relief group that's just arrived from Missouri. Spokesperson Ethan Forehead says multiple tractor trailers dispatched by the faith-based Convoy of Hope have arrived in hard-hit Fort Myers carrying water, food, and other emergency supplies.
We can send out smaller trucks, box trucks, into more hard-hit areas and go to neighborhoods, go to people, and drop off the supply that way.
Distribution begins in full force tomorrow. Both chambers of Congress have now signed off on an interim funding bill to keep federal agencies operating through mid-December. Here's NPR's Barbara Sprunt.
Congress averted a government shutdown by passing this continuing resolution with 11 hours to spare. Just 10 House Republicans joined all House Democrats in voting for the measure. The bill will extend funding at current levels through December 16th, giving both the House and Senate extra time to hammer out details for a broader budget deal. The package also includes $2.5 billion to aid communities devastated by natural disasters, $1 billion in funding a low-income home heating program, and $12 billion in aid for Ukraine.
That's NPR's Barbara Sprunt reporting. The Dow closed down nearly 500 points. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. A bill Congresswoman Mary Peltola sponsored passed the House yesterday, a bit more than 2 weeks after the Democrat was sworn in. Her first bill, H.R. 8888, calls for an Office of Food Security in the Department of Veterans Affairs. It passed overwhelmingly in the House chamber.
The yeas are 376, the nays are 49, two-thirds being in the affirmative, the rules are suspended, the bill is passed.
Peltola says the topic is important in Alaska, where roughly 10% of the population served in the military. Her spokesman says the bill was drafted in conjunction with the staff of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. The 49 no votes were cast by Republicans, many of them members of the right-wing Freedom Caucus. Today is a day of remembrance for Indian boarding schools in the U.S. and Canada. It's also known as Orange Shirt Day. The day of recognition was created by a boarding school survivor in British Columbia who had her favorite orange shirt taken away on the first day of boarding school. There were dozens of residential schools across Alaska. Generations of Alaskan Native children were also taken from their homelands to attend boarding schools in other parts of the country. There are a number of events happening around the state to bring attention to the damage these schools did to Indigenous children and to offer a way to honor victims and begin healing. Ati Nasaya works at AWARE, Juneau's Domestic Violence and Survivor Support Organization.
Many people live here and don't know the history of cultural genocide that's happened here on this land, as well as the ways in which cultural genocide and racism continue to impact families today.
In Anchorage and Juneau, people will wear orange shirts and gather during morning commute times today to wave at drivers and hold signs. She says it's a history that many Alaskans are completely unaware of.
Understanding what's happened here and understanding that history allows for us to strive to tend well to the landscape that we live in and to each other in a way that encourages us to support things like language revitalization.
This evening, there will be a formal apology prepared by the Alaska Quakers at the Sayik Gastineau School in Juneau. That's the site of the former Douglas Islands Friends Mission School. In May of this year, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland released the first report from an investigation into the problematic legacy of federal Indian boarding schools. The Government of Canada released a similar report in 2015 after several years of investigation by its Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Community members in the small town of Whale Pass on northern Prince of Wales Island are fighting against the state's plan to clear-cut nearly 300 acres of old-growth timber, including some within city limits. They're concerned the clear-cuts could hurt the town's tourism industry and make landslides more likely. And as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, time is running out to stop the timber sale.
I didn't work 20 years out of my life to have everything I built destroyed.
I find it amazing that you put the economic future of the town, and, you know, at risk for 392 acres of crappy timber.
That's some of the backlash that staff from the Alaska Division of Forestry received at a recent informational meeting in Whale Pass. 20 of Whale Pass's 100-some residents spoke at the September 26th meeting, with all but two condemning the division's plan to sell almost 300 acres of old-growth timber. The sales boundaries push up against homes and would leave the surrounding hillside clear-cut and barren. Jimmy Greeley lives on that hillside.
We're against it.
He looks out his kitchen window and sees orange ribbons marking the edge of the parcel slated to be clear-cut just 100 feet from his property line. He thinks it's too close.
The aspect that it's in the town, literally in the Whale Pass boundaries, it's not in the state forest land, but it's still within the Whale Pass boundaries.
Greeley says residents worry about what a bare hillside means for their safety.
And that concerns us with change of the water flow coming down the hill, the potential landslide, the wind coming from the north. The trees that are there now have a kind of give us adequate wind blockage.
Others who attended the meeting worried about impacts to traffic flow on Whale Pass's main roads or damaging fish habitat. Some took issue with the idea of noise pollution so close to their backyards. There's also murmurs of concern about what could happen to Whale Pass's visitor industry without the scenic attraction of the trees. Greeley says that Whale Pass attracts visitors with a do-it-yourself attitude, drawn to staying in a cabin and taking themselves fishing.
Basically, it would cut the whole clear cut the hillside and then kind of make Whale Pass not look very, very green anymore.
Greeley is a member of the homeowners group Friends of Whale Pass. He helped draft a resolution passed by the Whale Pass City Council, officially asking the state forestry officials to push the boundaries of the sale back by about 400 feet. Greeley says the resolution asks the state to take a second look at potential environmental impacts. The Division of Forestry's best interest finding says there shouldn't be substantial harm caused by the sale.
So we'd like just to see them put a little bit more due diligence into this instead of just kind of pushing it through.
Whale Pass's city clerk says he sent a copy of the resolution to the state's Department of Natural Resources. He also says he's been in touch with representatives from Governor Mike Dunleavy's office. An environmental policy analyst from the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council was one of the people who spoke out against the sale. Katie Rooks says she's not even sure why the state wants this particular timber. She says the trees in the area are known to have a lot of imperfections.
They've overlooked the fact that the economic damage to an entire community will reach far higher numbers than any potential benefit of this sale.
She told state forestry officials that they're going about the sale wrong, taking too much at once and too close to homes.
They're going to kill a town.
State authorities downplay the risk of landslides following the clear cut. State forestry officials say bedrock in areas above Whale Pass is relatively close to the surface, and that makes landslides unlikely. And the state's best interest finding says that helicopter logging, which could preserve some of the scenic views above Whale Pass, would be expensive and impractical. Viking Lumber, Southeast Alaska's last remaining mid-sized sawmill, is expected to bid on the sale. The company and the Alaska Forest Association submitted comments supporting the Whale Pass sale this spring. They say it'll be good for the island's economy. Southeast Alaska area forester Greg Staunton says the value comes from the mix of wood. Red cedar, yellow cedar, western hemlock, and Sitka spruce are all part of the deal.
It is merchantable volume, and it, from our analysis, would be economical to harvest in our present climate, and part of that has to do with the species mix that is on the site. So the defect in the stand is notable, but it's not abnormal for an old-growth stand.
Staunton says his department is aware of the strong opposition to the sale and welcomes more public input. He says there's no bad blood between the State Division of Forestry and Whale Pass residents.
You know, if people want to talk to us, we're available, and we make an effort to do so.
The division is taking public comments on the plan through mid-October. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
President Biden has made more disaster aid available to Alaska in response to Western Alaska storm damage this month. Biden revised the federal disaster declaration for Alaska Thursday morning, increasing the federal payment to 100% of the total eligible costs for the first 30 days. The decision means that the state won't have to pay any costs associated with the initial assistance to residents and communities who suffered losses from the remnants of Typhoon Murbach. The total cost of a disaster hasn't been tallied yet. Widespread damage included flooded streets in downtown Nome and lost subsistence food and fishing boats in Chivac. President's action comes only 2 days after Alaska's congressional delegation and the governor requested the change. More than 30 people marched in protest in Anchorage on Thursday night, frustrated that Anchorage police officers still do not have body-worn cameras, now a year and a half after voters approved them. Celeste Hodge Groudon, president of the Alaska Black Caucus, led the rally, starting in front of APD's downtown headquarters. Her organization successfully advocated for the $1.8 million purchase of body cameras, which Anchorage voters approved in March 2021.
And to see that we are no further along is, I don't even want to say the word because, you know, I'm a Christian. So what I will say that it is quite disturbing.
Anchorage Police, the city, and the Police Officers Union have been negotiating the body-worn camera policy for months, with no implementation date in sight. Officials with the police department would not comment on the policy on Thursday beyond saying that the process is ongoing. After about 30 minutes of protesting in front of the police headquarters, the group turned their attention to City Hall, walking several blocks in unison. Many held signs with messages like APD, Cam up now, and No Accountability, No Justice. Jeremiah Savage led protesters in chants through a megaphone.
What do we want?
Body cams!
What do we want?
Now!
APD!
You get a job!
APD!
You get a job!
The protest lasted just under an hour. Last month, the Alaska Black Caucus and other groups sent a letter threatening legal action over the lack of body camera policy. Rich Kirtner is an attorney for the nonprofit.
I don't know what the holdup is. You know, it was privacy for a while. Now it's to the union. Now it's arbitration. And it just seems like it's taking too long.
Kirtner says the Alaska Black Caucus is still exploring legal options to get the policy implemented. Several Alaska law enforcement agencies already have body-worn cameras, including the State Troopers, University of Alaska Anchorage Police, and the Kotzebue Police Department. A federal grant will fund reclamation of watersheds damaged by historic mining operations in two areas of Alaska's interior. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
The Bureau of Land Management has awarded $1 million in bipartisan infrastructure law funds to the Salcha Delta Soil and Water Conservation District to restore placer mining sites in the White Mountains and 40 Mile areas. Conservation District Programs Director Jeff Durham says the projects are just the latest his organization has partnered on with the BLM, targeting abandoned sites where streams were dredged prior to the implementation of reclamation regulations.
Leaving lots of tailings and piles in sort of a straight shot instead of a meandering kind of waterway.
Durham says that can lead to several problems.
There's concern about water quality and about impaired fish and wildlife habitat, impaired recreational opportunities. Oftentimes these watersheds don't operate correctly and can take out a road or ruin access.
Durham says restoration of the mining damaged streams starts with an assessment.
Go in and try and understand the system and then come up with a plan to put it back to as close to a natural stream as possible. So meandering, falls. The mining operations have left very little organic material, so there's not a lot of vegetation. So we bring that in from the surrounding area, and we try to rebuild a natural-looking stream course so that the watershed is protected from sediment through erosion, and that you can start to create these pockets of fish and wildlife habitat.
Durham says local miners are often contracted with to do the restoration work because they already have heavy equipment in the typically remote areas. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Read diverse, read indie. On Insight Daily Radio, conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Shorn, book one of the Sky Seeker series, is an intelligent and captivating new fantasy novel. Author Larissa N.N. Davila, also a child psychologist, tells a story of oppression and resilience, the high cost of vengeance, and the malleable nature of truth. Through vivid characters and a believable world, she explores the question, are we destined to identify ourselves by the scars others give us? We spoke with Davila about her new novel that Kirkus Reviews called a grand-scale fantasy with remarkable depth and characters that are emotionally relatable and endearing.
I have been a storyteller all my life, and I was writing short stories from the moment that there was a pencil in my hand. So in writing Shorn, I don't think there was any epiphany moment when I said, oh gosh, I'm a writer now, I'm a storyteller now. But what was exciting, what still gives me a thrill, is to know that now I can share the story with so many more people. And that really does, that's exciting. And that is something that I am enjoying, and I look forward to sharing with more people as the series goes along. Yeah, but I think I've been a storyteller for a very, very long time.
That's author Larissa N.N. Davila on her new fantasy novel, Shorn, which is available wherever books are sold. Learn more about Shorn and the Sky Seeker series at stoneravenpress.com. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Friday. It is the 30th day of September, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 8:12 this morning. It will set again at 7:45. That will give us 11 hours and 33 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low temperature for this date was 27, set in 2012. Our record high was 63 degrees, set in 1978 and 1982. Currently 50 degrees under fair skies, calm winds, 63% humidity. Out at the airport, they have 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for the sunny skies to continue for the rest of the day and mostly clear skies overnight, too. High near 52 today, low around 35 overnight. Look for west winds to 5 to become southeast later today, and then turn back to the west after midnight tonight. For tomorrow, rain is likely between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Look for increasing clouds as the day goes by tomorrow, a high near 54, west winds to 10, turning to the south in the afternoon. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up this afternoon at 5:13 here on the east side. That will be a 9.5-foot tide, followed by a low tide at midnight, 12:02 a.m., of 0 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:43 this afternoon and be 14.7 feet, followed by a low tide at 12:25 a.m. of minus 4/10 in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory for tomorrow. For today, variable 10, seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow and tomorrow night, southwest 25, seas coming up to 7 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 today, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, look for southwest 15, seas to 4 feet. The Women's Bay Service Area Board is having their meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall next Tuesday, October 4th. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. The next day, Wednesday, October 5th, Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having their board meeting at the Bayside Fire Hall. That meeting will start at 6 p.m. And the Borough Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Assembly Chambers next Thursday, October 6th at 6:30 p.m. Come to the garden party at the library starting in about a half hour at 1 p.m. Goes through 3 p.m. It's a great day for it. They're going to be weeding, planting, and digging in the new soil to help get the gardens ready for winter. Tools and gloves are provided. Again, that starts at 1 p.m. today and goes through 3 p.m. Also, something new and fun at the library, Lasers and Feelings. It's a Dungeons and Dragons type game. It's a 1 to 2 hour library program. Create a character and role play through an adventure with a group. Ages 10 and older are welcome. Those under 18 must be with a guardian who is also playing. Players are able to participate at the discretion of the volunteering game master. The first meeting is today from 3 to 5 p.m. Sign up by calling or stopping by the library. That number to call the library is 907-486-8686. And the library is open from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday. And for today and Saturday, it's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tomorrow is the Humane Society of Kodiak's Walk Your Dog event. That's happening at 10 a.m. at the Kodiak College, but you can get there at 9:30 to pre-register and pick up your t-shirt. Join in the fun for dogs and their humans. Pre-registration is available online. Go to the Kodiak Animal Shelter website, which is predictably at www.kodiakanimalshelter.org, or you can call Linda at 907-654-5717. But again, that's tomorrow, 10 a.m., Kodiak College. Bring your dog. Fun for dogs and their humans. There will be a celebration of life for Bill Harrington tomorrow. That's happening from 4 to 7 p.m. at Tony's. Everyone in the community is welcome to come. Please bring a potluck dish to share, an instrument to play if you feel like jamming, and your memories and good cheer. They're looking forward to seeing you there. Again, that's tomorrow, 4 to 7 p.m. at Tony's. Also tomorrow, from 3 to 4 p.m. at the Kodiak History Museum, they're going to be launching their new lecture series, Lectures at KHM. This lecture series will explore the work that KHM has done in the past year and significant events in Kodiak's history. This lecture tomorrow will introduce the new temporary exhibit program. So if you're interested in learning more about how you can be part of the temporary exhibit program, come to the Kodiak History Museum tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. and learn more from the curator. The lecture is free with the cost of admission to the museum. On Wednesday, October 5th, the Kodiak Amateur Radio Emergency Services Group will be offering amateur radio licensing exams. The exams will be held at Bayside Volunteer Fire Department's training room. Again, that's next Wednesday, and that's happening at 7 p.m. You need to pre-register, for more information, please contact John Kimmel. His phone number is 907-942-0741, and the testing is provided at no charge. The Kodiak Fish and Game Advisory Committee is having their election and meeting on Monday, October 10th, a week from this next Monday. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. over at the Fish and Game Building on Near Island in the Chiniac Conference Room. The purpose of the meeting is to hold elections for expired and vacant seats and to discuss Board of Fisheries Pacific Cod proposals and other committee business. The meeting is open to the public, and all residents of the area who attend the meeting and are of legal voting age may make nominations, vote on committee membership. So again, that's a week from this next Monday, 5:30 p.m. over at the Fish and Game Building. If you need to learn to know more, contact Taryn at 907-842-5142.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the September 30th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. When I was younger, I remember people my parents' age saying things about how time seems to fly by faster as you get older. I'm now old enough to understand what they meant. Where on earth did September go? Actually, we've had a wonderful long autumn, and it looks like it will continue for a while longer. The blustery weather earlier this week knocked some of the color off the trees, but there's still plenty of autumn color left to enjoy. For hikers, there are advantages to fall. As the foliage continues to drop, trails become a little easier, albeit still wet, to navigate. Grasses start to lay down, and fewer leaves on the alders mean a little less bushwhacking is needed to get from point A to point B. If you're an alpine hiker, this is a beautiful time to get out there before the snow flies, and you need skis or snowshoes to navigate the mountaintops. Although the Buskin remains closed to silver fishing, the Olds River, American, Saltry, and Passaic Shack rivers still have some fish. Last week, it was the Olds River that was the place to be. Get out there and try your hand at reeling in a couple of salmon for the barbecue or freezer this week. If you're hoping to stay closer to home to fish after work, try Mill Bay or Mission Beach. As always, when hiking or fishing, be bear aware. Speaking of bears, the Kodiak Bears volleyball teams have home games on Friday and Saturday, starting at 4:30 Friday and 3 p.m. on Saturday. Head on over to the high school to cheer them on against Wasilla. And if you're looking for a great way to spend part of your Saturday, the Fall Women's Show is from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Ifognak Center and the Kana Koniag buildings on Near Island. You'll be amazed at the businesses and services you'll find there. Enjoy! And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.